This is Brandon.
Sheldon.
Arcade.
We're the cast of Gamers Paradise.
And you're listening to...
Beam Me Up, Scotty.
Too hotty.
Please welcome Robert Ryan. All right, so tell us about your experience on the 1996 film, The Craft.
Well, back then, this movie's, my goodness, the original Craft, is it like 30 years ago now? It's so long ago.
But, God, is it that long? Jeez.
Yeah, it's a long time. Back then, I was working as a unit publicist for different studios, Columbia TriStar and Universal specifically. And I got a call regarding working on this movie about witchcraft from one of the producers, Ginny Nugent, who I've done other movies with. So she called me, and for your audience who don't know what a unit publicist does, as a matter of fact, a lot of the crew doesn't even know what a unit publicist does. It's pretty funny. But at that time, I was a very experienced publicist. And what it is it's a publicist to the unit, meaning you are on location for the entire time of the movie. A regular publicist might be back at the office or the studio, but the unit goes out and is there the whole time, and it's actually a pretty detailed job. So anyhow, I got the call. Columbia wanted me to do the movie, and I remember going to the studio and where I met the girls the first time. I remember they were sitting kind of in the – it's like a campus at Columbia. And they were sitting on the steps of one of the buildings. And I went up and introduced myself, and they all kind of looked at me. And I said, hey, you know, I'm the unit publicist. And I think it was Feruza who said, we don't do publicity, which maybe want to laugh right off the bat because she was already like Nancy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking when she said that – well, they may have not read their contracts because, you know, one thing actors don't understand is that's a huge part of the success of a movie is letting people know about it.
Oh, yeah.
So at that time, you know, it was early on in the movie. I mean, I wound up, this is an L.A. film, and I live in Los Angeles. So, you know, from that point on, I was dealing with the film. And one of the first jobs they gave me, Ginny, who I'd worked with on other films like Tremors and other movies, she said, hey, you know, we need a witch consultant for the film. And because you're really good at this and you're a writer, can you find us a witch consultant? So I went about looking into it, and I found a high priestess in Wicca. And her organization was the largest. It had 250,000 members.
Oh, wow.
So I brought her in. I remember meeting her, and she looked like kind of like a Midwest housewife. I mean, she didn't look anything very scary or whatever. She was very normal. But Wicca is interesting in that it's not really the scary stuff. It's all kind of like the Earth Mother.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, candles and all this kind of stuff. So at this point, Feruza was not familiar with witchcraft or whatnot, so this lady came in and she started familiarizing Feruza Balk with witchcraft. And what your listeners may be interested in is that Feruza became extremely interested in witchcraft.
Really?
And so much so that she started doing some of the ceremonies herself. And got the candles from the witch consultant, and she would use the candles to make decisions about the movie and things like this. Now, I got along great with the girls after that first day. They were all really great. I think I had probably more time with Nev Campbell. She's just such a sweetheart. Robin Tunney was pretty much in character. You know, I really think that the one thing about The Craft, and it's really a great, Andy Fleming directed, Doug Wick, who was the producer I had worked with on other projects, and he wound up doing Gladiator, so he, you know, this was early in his career.
Yeah.
But where was I? I was saying that, so the witch consult, she was consulting all the candles and everything. So I'll give your audience a couple stories.
Yes, go ahead.
I'll give you two stories. One was we shot at the beach, which is up near Malibu, and that's the scene where all the dead fish wind up on the beach and whatnot.
Right.
So we shot that scene at night, and so we set up location all during the day, and Firuza was in her trailer, and the candles said for her basically that she shouldn't shoot, that it wasn't a good time to work on the film.
Oh, okay.
So she wouldn't come out of her trailer, and I remember, you know, when you're dealing with studio people, you know, at that point, I mean, that scene could have been $500,000, you know, you're at the beach, and you've got all your trucks, and everybody's there. Well, she wouldn't come out. She said she had a stomachache, and she didn't want to come out of her trailer. So they call the witch consultant, and she goes into the trailer. And finally, Firuza decides she's gonna come out of the trailer. So it was quite a save. You know, I guess she gave her a different colored candle or something.
Right. Possibly.
So,
yeah.
There's two crazy things that happened that night. You know, in the movie, they're going Manon, this Manon or Manon.
Yeah.
Well, there's two different pronunciations of it. And the way they were pronouncing it was the god of the sea. So instead of this fictitious kind of godlike devil head witchcraft name, Manon, they were going Manon. But anyhow, according to the witch consultant, they were conjuring the god of the sea instead of this other fictitious character.
Right.
So as the shoot went on, some weird stuff started happening on set. Everything I'm going to tell you really happened. So this is pretty crazy. So first they started doing it, and they got into the four girls, you know, northeast, southwest, and they're doing actual Wicca ceremonies because they've been trained by the witch consultant. So they're saying actual things that, you know, they do in witchcraft.
I didn't know that. Well, that's awesome. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's all very, very accurate. That's why you bring in a witch consultant, because you don't want all the Wiccans in the world to go, this is all BS, you know?
Yeah.
So as we're doing on location, they're calling this Manon, and the sea started rising, and it wiped out the set. It came up so high.
Oh, we had
like just all of a sudden a really sudden high tide. Now, you could just go, okay, it's coincidental, and it probably is.
Right, yeah, but
it wiped out the where they had done the four corners. And I think if you look at the movie, you can see the tide coming up a little, but it knocked it out, so they had to rebuild that the four corners. And then there was another thing that really happened, and honest to God, it's almost like it was written into the movie, but as they're doing the chanting, there was a big light that was set up, and it had many lights attached, almost like at a baseball park, you know, where you have a bunch of lights to light up the beach, because we're there. There's no lights. It's at night. And all of a sudden, it exploded in sparks as they're doing the ceremony. Okay?
Wow.
And a group of bats flew over at the same moment. So we had bats and these sparks. I'm not making this really happen. It happened so much so that I sent it as a, you know, one of the jobs of a publicist is you're looking for little stories that happen on the set that you can put out to different reporters or that are out there. And I put it out as an item about what happened. And it ran. I don't know if it ran on the trays, but it did run. So that was one story where witchcraft played a part actually in what was happening during the movie.
That is so wild.
So that was wild. I have a couple stories from when we were shooting downtown.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I worked on a couple movies in downtown Los Angeles, one that I was involved in producing. I'm also an actor, so I was in it. It's called Parasites. Not Parasite, the Academy Award winner. It's Parasites, which is about homeless people downtown. I did that. And one of my films that I produced, Exorcism at 60,000 Feet, we also shot when I said downtown, we're talking Skid Row. I mean, we're talking the
right, yeah.
The tents, and you know, I don't know if people have seen this, but our Skid Row in Los Angeles is—it's just unbelievable. You know, there's thousands and thousands of tents out there. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
So, but one of the things that happened is one of our trucks got shot. They shot bullets into one of the truck. And one of the things that they had not done, the location manager, is they hadn't made a deal with the local gang for that area for permission to shoot.
That's a thing? I didn't know that was a thing. Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
It's a thing.
Wow.
You got to pay them. So, yeah, there's a lot of little secrets about
Wow.
it. So they wanted their little kickback. And they paid them to, and what they call, you know, it's called protection. So once they shoot the holes in your truck, they're basically protecting, you're paying them to protect you from them.
Right? Yeah.
Right. So that was one thing that was wild, was that we had to deal with that. And then another thing I remember is that we were down there a couple nights for the scene where the girls are on the sidewalk and the guy with the snake chases them and all this kind of stuff. But we were feeding people. You know, so on a movie set, your lunch is called halfway through the day. So in other words, if you start shooting at 6 p.m., they'll call lunch at midnight or 1 a.m.
Yeah.
That's called the lunch break. So we were breaking, you know, in the middle of the night, and we had extras that were homeless. So there were hundreds of extras that were in the scene. And then what happened is the local homeless people, the real homeless people, got in our food line. So they were being fed by our catering, thinking that they were part of you, because we dressed all our extras like homeless. So.
Right, yeah.
So we were feeding the homeless down there, which is fun.
I was going to say that's awesome, though. You know, like,
yeah,
good on you guys.
You're standing in line and you're getting your, quote, lunch, and you're looking at someone going, are they, you know, in wardrobe or are they homeless?
So yeah. You know,
we fed homeless people. You know, on movies, in my capacity, I would spend a lot of time with the actors and their trailers and whatnot. And, you know, Frieza is a brilliant actress, but she's, you know, she's a character, man. She's, you know,
yeah.
she is who she is.
She has these intense eyes. I mean, just her eyes, I think. Even just,
no, she's beautiful.
Yeah, like, they're beautiful. So intense. Like, she can say a thousand things with her eyes,
yeah.
And that's it. Never
yeah.
say a word, but, you know, just her eyes.
I'll tell you a story I've never told anybody, so you'll have this exclusive.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay, go ahead.
So Frieza wants to talk to me in the trailer, and, you know, I do interviews with them, and, you know, I bring press to them, whatever. So I go to her trailer, and she says, yeah, come on in. And I look, and she's wearing a completely see-through top. Almost like made of plastic, so there is absolutely nothing covering her. And I'm talking to her, and she's just basically bare-breasted in her trailer. And I was just, you know, she probably liked how it looked, but it was just a little. That was interesting,
right? Wow,
that was funny. What else do I remember about it? I remember. Here's one for you. You know, I think if your audience noticed, the real craft fans, there was one thing that didn't quite work in the movie, and that was because when Robin Tunney was hired, she had done another movie and she had short hair,
mm-hmm.
really short. So they had to put a wig on her for the craft, and it's really, really a bad wig. And you can see up around the top of her forehead the line of the wig. And we would be in dailies, you know, dailies being the footage every day that you would look at to see
yeah.
if there's problems or things that need to be shot. And I was sitting with the producers in there like, oh, my God. They're thinking, do we reshoot this? You know, do the scenes with her? Because it's really hard to not look at that bad wig.
I'm going to have to go back and look specifically for the wig now, like, next time I watch
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you have to look at the top of her forehead. It's one of those things where they've glued it down, and it just doesn't look real. And the problem is a couple scenes, like when she changes her hair color, that you're very close and tight on her, you know, her face and her hair.
Yeah.
So you can see it there, too. I'll tell you another little story is when we were shooting at the house, the scene where all the snakes and the spiders and the cockroaches, that scene had more critters more rats, more spiders, and more snakes in any movie at that time.
That was the scariest scene to me, like, because, you know, just scarier than anything else. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking barrels filled of cockroaches, you know, thousands and thousands of bugs and spiders, and it was practical. It wasn't, they weren't CGIing any of that. Those are all real. Now, there may have been a couple rubber ones thrown in, like, on top of the scene up on top, but right. Most of them I recall, and they had big snakes. I mean, they had, you know, 16-foot boas and things like that all around, so... It was pretty creepy.
Yeah, you know? I don't do spiders or snakes, and so that scene was always the stuff of nightmares for me.
Yeah, you know? Well, I remember there'd only been Raiders of the Lost Ark had a scene where they had a lot of snakes in it.
Yeah.
And I think we beat them. Literally, I remember there were barrels filled with snakes. You know, they take the top off, and there'd be hundreds of snakes in there, and they just dump them on the stairs or whatnot. So that was pretty creepy.
Yeah, I would not. No, somebody has to take the snakes, put them in the barrel. That person would not be me. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, there's fun experts, you know, people that deal with this. I remember working on Mouse Hunt, and, you know, there are people that just train the mice to do certain things, you know, like certain skills and whatnot. So that was another thing. I mean, I enjoyed working with all the girls. You know, you never know when you're making a movie how successful it's going to be. I think a big part of the film's success is Firuza. In seeing the new movie, there was a lot of people talking online and with me, because I said, well, I had seen the trailer, and the trailer looked like a remake. And
for the Kraft Legacy is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, Kraft Legacy. They're saying it's was not a remake, but there's so much that's really is a remake. So I don't know. I don't know how it's doing, but I think Firuza was the anchor of that film. You had to have that evil, and she's just a terrific actress. You know, she's just great. So,
oh yeah,
it was a fun experience, and I'm glad it became a film. It was the same when I worked on Tremors. You know, we didn't think it was going to be what it was. You know,
oh yeah, totally. Like it's such a franchise now. It has spawned so many sequels and you know television series and, you know, just everything. It's a pretty big name, you know?
Yeah, it was fun. We were up in Lone Pine, California, this little town that's near Mount Whitney. And they actually built a town out in the desert that was built in the middle of nowhere. And that was another fun project I enjoyed working on. So I said, in my job, I would spend a lot of time with the character actors, hanging out with them, you know?
Yeah.
So... it's a great part of that job. I decided I didn't want to do it anymore because I had been a publicist really from getting out of college, and I decided I want to do more writing and more creating, and that's when I went into make my own films,
right,
and producing. So I hope your audience will catch a couple of my films. One is Cynthia, which came out in 2018. I wrote and produced it. I'm also in it, and I financed it.
Oh, awesome.
The whole thing. And it stars Scout Taylor Compton from Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Halloween, yes.
And it also stars Sid Haig, the clown guy from The Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses.
He's also actually in Halloween, too, as well. Or Halloween,
yes,
as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's just in a scene, I think. Yeah. Of that one.
He was one of my best friends. I did tons of events. He was always in my booth at shows, and he was on three covers. We didn't mention my magazine. I created Girls and Corpses magazine.
Yes, go ahead.
Sid was on three covers, and we, you know, he was just a really, really great friend. You know, I found working on these movies that very often the coolest people are the people who play the serial killers and the murderers. Those actors are always the fun, nice people. The ones,
yeah,
that
definitely.
With are the ones that play like the really nice people that you think are nice, and they're rotten in real life. But yeah, Sid was great, and then Billy Moseley, another incredible character actor, was also in Cynthia. And by the way, Cynthia is streaming, you know, everywhere. You can just search it. Cynthia 2018. Really fun movie. Robert Lissardo's also in that. Lynn Lowry, who's also another horror icon. And then I more recently made Exorcism at 60,000 Feet. And that is also streaming like everywhere. And it stars Lance Henriksen, you know, from Aliens.
Right.
Bill Moseley again. Also Bai Ling, who's in The Crow. Kevin J. O'Connor, who is another amazing actor, was in The Mummy. I mean, we have a great cast. Adrian Barbeau, Swamp Thing, Escape from New York. So,
yeah.
But anyhow, Exorcism at 60,000 Feet is a really fun movie. It's sort of Airplane meets The Exorcist.
That movie sells me on its title alone. So,
well, it's really, really fun. And we it was a tough film. We were, 2 weeks inside of an airplane in cramped quarters. And, I like working with really great talent. And I think the experience I had working on these films as a unit publicist trained me a lot in terms of making movies. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna watch them, and then I'll when I have you on next time again, we'll talk about just your films there, Cynthia, and
yeah.
Then Exorcism at 60,000 Feet, which I love saying.
Yeah. Well, if your audience can watch them, and then when I come on, I can discuss them. They've gotten really great reviews. They're a lot of fun. I have another movie in post. Will be coming out. Right now, it's going to AFM, but it's called Escape from Area 51.
Ooh, I like that too. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's another. It was kind of based on the idea that when everyone was partying at Area 51, remember they're going to, it was the raid on
yes.
Area 51. So we thought, well, what if when everyone was trying to go in, what was really happening is someone was getting out or something.
Ooh.
So that's what was happening. It was a diversion, so this it could get out. So that's that one. So yeah, it's fun, man. I'm having a good time making the movies, and Girls and Corpses is still selling worldwide.
Tell us about that, if you don't care, real quick. The Girls and Corpses magazine.
Well, we started online, and it became extremely like the it thing and popular. People that haven't seen it, it's a comedy horror magazine. It's the first comedy magazine about death. It's a magazine that. Looks like it would just be completely insane, but we have really interesting articles because since it is about death, we interview people in, that do autopsies or work in the morgue business, body retrieval, people that work in with corpses, cremators and things like this. So, but it also has crazy comedy and a lot of celebrities on the cover, and this kind of thing. So it's kind of like Mad Magazine meets Dawn of the Dead meets, National Lampoon and Maxim Magazine. And then we have Beautiful Girls. So we play on the premise where we actually get gorgeous girls, some of them celebrities, and we shoot them with corpses. How about that for an idea?
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
See, yeah.
And so here's the crazy thing. So it went from being online. Actually, a friend of mine, Eli Roth, who's a great director who did the Hostel movies.
You don't have to tell me what Eli Roth has done. I mean, come on now. Yeah.
Well, he's a friend. He's a brilliant, brilliant director. I just love everything he does. And he was kind of instrumental in helping things push along early on when we were online. And then I wound up getting a partner who had published print magazines named Stephen Miller. He helped me get into print, and two issues in, he got killed by a grizzly bear, for real.
Oh my gosh.
And it became quite a story. That's a whole other hour. But if you go to, National Geographic did a piece on it called Grizzly Face to Face. And believe it or not, they've got the footage of him being killed by this grizzly bear. Because he was the first person ever killed by a grizzly bear in California, because there are no grizzly bears in California. This
wow.
is a movie bear that was trained by his cousin/brother situation, because Stephen was adopted. Randy Miller, who ran that animal place called Predators in Action. So, I've had a lot of crazy stories with the magazine. What can I tell you? And I kept it going, obviously, for many years. So we got, from being online, we went to print. Then we got distribution, U.S. through Ingram, which put out Time and Newsweek, really a huge distributor, did really well. And then we got international distribution and started selling all over the world. And for the past, 15 years, we've sold like crazy. And, you know, merchandise and whatnot, and then we became a film label. So that's the progression. That's why we're doing films now.
I love it.
You know, it's a brand. It's a brand.
I love
it.
The
best part is I have a great publicist, which is myself. I couldn't afford myself to hire myself. But I know a lot about publicity, and you know, it's very important to understand, you know, how that all works.
And who can sell you better than you, too, you know?
Exactly, so. And, you know, being on sets, kind of being like a sponge, it was, you know, I advise people that are trying to get into the business, you know, you may want to produce or you may want to act or, you know, be on big productions. But there's anything you do in the regular world can be done in film. Name any job. You like to cook? Well, there's, you know, catering and chefs. You build, you do contracting? Well, they have to have sets built.
Right.
You know? And you like plants? You like, you know, there are people that work just, they're the greens people on movies. They bring the trees in and all this kind of stuff.
That's so true. Like, have you seen those films where they have flies and in the end credits it says fly wranglers are, you know, and it lists them? And I'm like, that's a job, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's people, because there's insect people, you know, who come on. There's all the, you know, animal, you like animals? Well, there's animal training. Literally any job you do medicine? Well, there's a set doctor. As a set nurse, this is true. You know, you're a doctor. Well, you become a consultant for medical shows.
Right.
So, I guess that the idea is try to get on the set in some position other than running the whole thing to learn. Because when you get to the position of maybe being a producer or director, then you have experience of seeing it. At least you're there. So that's kind of how I built up my experience. But I've had a lot of great experiences. I have a lot of friends that I worked with that are terrific actors, and you know, I'm lucky because that's how I can get some of these people in my movies.
Have you written your memoirs?
You know, people have come to me and wanted me to write my memoirs. I have a lot of crazy stories. You know, I mean, I actually died when I was 10 years old. There's a starter for you. I had a severe skull fracture. There's a book. My first book was called My Brain Escapes Me. And the reason I named it that, and this was in bookstores, Barnes & Noble and Borders and everything. And the reason I wrote the stories that are in there are because, and that title is because my brain literally was exposed through my skull.
Wow.
So I had 64 stitches in my head. I missed a year of school when I was 10. I think it was fifth grade I missed. And they sprayed a plastic sealant over my shaved head so I looked like Alien Boy.
Wow.
And I got all the letters from the classmates who, you know, basically were saying goodbye. I kept them. But I did die when I first came in after the skull fracture. My parents were notified that I was heading down the drain. And then I made it. I went blind in one eye for a certain amount of time, a couple months from that injury. I got my vision back. You know, I've got like crazy stories. I really do.
I cannot wait to have you back on. I really can't. I'm so excited. I have had like so much fun just talking to you here.
I love, you know, the thing with me is it's not getting me to talk. It's getting me to shut up because I like talking. And, you know, I really encourage people out there. I know, you know, a lot of people try to get into business. Things are very different right now. You know, and making movies, forget about COVID. Making movies generally are so different because you can't get a movie in the theater. You know, there are, well, with COVID, there are no theaters. That
right.
might be a whole other story because
everyone
always wondered, what's it going to be that will take out the, stop people from going to theaters or end that? Well, we're kind of there. A lot of these movie chains are really having trouble. And even before then, it was only the studio, you know, the studios, for your audience, own the theaters. They own the theater chains. So if you make a movie, an independent movie, well, good luck. You're not going to get in the theater. They're all going to be Marvel movies or because the studios, you know, if you do get in a theater, it will be, you know, 1 a.m. on a Sunday, you know.
Yeah, where nobody's going to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's left for you. So the theater thing, I grew up wanting movies to be in theaters. That's why I made films. So it's disappointing, but now it's just everything being streamed.
I don't like the streaming thing. I'm just going to – I mean, it's okay if you're watching a movie, right? But I don't want to... I'm a collector, and I just cannot just, you know, convert my entire collection to just digital. I have to have the physical copies of the film,
TV series. I like that.
I just...
Listen, I got a someone called me the other day, asked about a movie I made. I didn't want to say how long ago, but it was one of the first things I ever did. It was called Road Lawyers. And it was a takeoff on Road Warriors, but it was lawyers have taken over the world.
Oh, okay.
And they're looking for the last, you know, for a cup of coffee and the last client. They're all fighting for the last client. So guy called me and he was like, I'm like, dude, I mean, that thing was like, really? He goes, yeah. He says, we're a VHS distribution place. A lot of people want VHSs.
They do.
How about that?
They do. My friend Brian, actually, he does movie reviews on every episode at the end of the episode. And, I mean, he collects. He has a collection of VHS tapes. I mean, that's what he has. He collects VHS tapes. That's his thing. He has a ton of them.
Well, does he? I don't have all my movies on VHS, but if he does movie reviews, let me know and I'll send him Cynthia and Exorcism.
Oh, okay. I'll let him know for sure. I'll send him this. I usually after I do an interview, I usually send it straight to him so he can listen to it.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you know, in the short term, well, he's a collector, so he wants to have the hard copies. But as I said, it's, you know, the movies are streaming like everywhere because I got, you know, that's what the distribution did. They made the deals with all the streaming companies. But also, you know, my movies are in Walmart and Best Buy and, you know, all this kind of stuff, which is good too, I guess, you know.
It's so awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. So, I mean, that's the story. I don't know about my memoirs. I mean, I don't feel the story's there yet. You know, I really would like to have a movie that breaks out, and that's the whole deal. And it's a very challenging thing. But I feel really happy. I think Cynthia and Exorcism at 60,000 Feet are really representative of our Girls and Corpses film label. They're good movies, you know. They're really fun. They got kind of that 80s vibe. They're crazy movies.
I love that 80s vibe. I cannot wait to watch them, actually. After I watch them, I'm going to text you and tell you what I thought, you know, like, let you know I've watched them, because I can't wait to see them now. Now I'm, like, super excited to watch them.
Yeah, you won't be bored, you know. And also with the talent, you know, when you've got those people, they're, you know, you're going to have that. And then Chad Theron, who's done a lot of horror films, like Someone's Knocking on My Door and all this kind of stuff, he directed the Exorcism movie, and the Cynthia was directed by Kenny Gage and Devin Downs, two directors, actually, on the same movie. And they did a movie called Anarchy Parlor. But, you know, they were great productions, and I'm just trying to figure out how to make a buck.
Right. Yeah, well, before we go, do you have any last words you would like to leave the listeners with?
Well, last words. I would just say, you know, I'm going to be kind of just talking about what we're going through, but I know that every generation has had great challenges, you know, and our parents had World War II and the Great Depression, and people get through stuff. You know, it just takes time. So hang in there. And I think the movies hopefully will eventually come back to theaters and things like this. But keep on trucking, man. Things will get better.
Hey, this is Brian with another movie review. And this week I decided to do Silent Night, Deadly Night. Now, a lot of people know of this movie recently because there's a pretty good clip from recently of the second Silent Night, Deadly Night, of the main killer shooting a guy who's taking a garbage can out, and he goes, "Garbage day," and he shoots him in the face, and it's like one of those hilariously bad scenes. But that does not paint a true picture of how awesome Silent Night, Deadly Night, the first movie is. I think Silent Night, Deadly Night, the first movie is pretty well made. It's got its plot holes and stuff, but when you think about the whole premise of the movie and how it plays out, it's a pretty terrifying movie, and it's almost like a character study on the guy who actually goes around in the Santa Claus outfit killing people. You see what happens to him as a kid. He grows up in a foster home that with a religious nun who beats him and all this stuff. And then you see how all that psychological trauma kind of leads him to become this serial killer. And I'm not saying that this movie is some great, you know, grade A piece of cinematic work like an Alfred Hitchcock movie, but it's just so goddamn entertaining, and it's so fucking good. I mean, the kills are great, the dialogue is hilarious, but you also get this, like, kind of feeling of dread, and sometimes there's even a good sense of kind of, like, creating tension with a lot of the scenes. The soundtrack is great. I wish I could say the same for the sequels, but I really think that Silent Night, Deadly Night is one of the great slashers of the 80s, and I think that a lot more people should check it out than they actually do. So, if you want, it's on Blu-ray, it's on VHS, it's on DVD, I'm sure it's on streaming. So, if you really want to see Silent Night, Deadly Night, I suggest you check it out.
Beat me up, Mr. Scotty.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Man, how you doing? Oh my God, I got danger with us today.
Ooh, nice. What's up?
Oh yeah, we're very, very lucky. We just dropped Don Shaw. Oh my God, we just did a. I was like, I know it takes 6 minutes to get from R4 to the basement level of our building because I timed it the other day.
Totally 9 stories.
Wait, it's not, man. It's a couple more than that now, but my God, man, we were hustling. I'm like, Scotty's calling. He's gonna call at 9. He's like, oh my God, we better pick up the speed here, man.
You can No, dude, you can always just message me and be like, hey, call it like 9:15 or 9:30 or whatever,
yeah,
you know.
It's okay. We made it, man. We made it. And I'm like, well, because we just started to do this thing. I'm just like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to take the elevator down. Because the elevator sometimes, if the elevator's not specifically set to our floor, then it will, it'll take like a couple minutes to get there. I'm like, if I just walk down the steps, that's only 6 flights, and I'm going to have an amazing ass. I'm going to have America's ass, you know? When I'm done with it.
That is a goal. That is a goal right there.
Yeah, man. Like that's the goal, right? So, I mean, why not?
I saw an article the other day that did you ever watch Smallville?
Oh yeah, I remember Smallville.
Yeah, Smallville's my favorite show. Like I love Smallville. Anyway, I read an article that Drew Scott, one of the Property Brothers, was Tom Welling's butt double on Smallville.
What?
Right?
Are you kidding me?
That's what it
said. Butt double? Oh my God.
I know. Tiffany, she was like, I feel cheated. I thought this whole time that was Tom Welling. I'm like, you know,
yeah.
I thought so too, you know, but... Evidently not. I was like, wow, him? Drew Scott? Really? I find that very hard to believe. I really do.
You want to know who didn't have a butt double?
Who?
Danger on Game of
Thrones. I knew what you were going to say. I just wanted you to say it.
that was a real life piece.
I didn't have a double butt.
It's okay, Arcade. Most people have seen my butt too, honestly. I mean, it's just...
Let me tell you, he's getting more gorgeous by the day. Danger, well, how much are we down?
40 some odd pounds,
man.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's crazy. Since moving to the new place, he hasn't worked out not one day, though. Not one day, not twice. It's been crazy, man.
Well,
oh my God.
But that's awesome, though. That's good. I'm really proud of him.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good. I'm so happy, man. Oh my God! I mean, I don't notice any change, but I mean, he's still, you know, he's gorgeous to me.
I love that. I really do. I can totally see that. If I lived up there with you guys, I would really be a very happy guy because you know you all three, four of you are just fantastic. I mean, you are all of you.
Oh man, thanks so much, man. We have so much fun, like. It's crazy. Right now, we're basically on night watch here.
we're just walking in the parking garage because it's a little bit too cold outside, and the parking garage is warm and heated.
That's awesome. It is freezing here. It's really cold.
It's freezing outside. I went for a late night walk last night with Danger because on our Christmas tree, we put scratch and win tickets. So we go out to the store, and we have this really nice Asian lady who hooks us up with all these scratch and win tickets. And she's like, oh, hi, guys. Claire. We pay for them.
Yeah.
Most of them. Anyway. She's like, hey guys, I got your scratches. And we're like, yeah, we're like, what? Because we can't, like, we walk so far, and we have this special Quickie Mart. It's just like, it's freezing outside, so I have to go inside. And it was the first time that we've ever been to it, or like 2 weeks ago, not even, a week and a half ago. And this girl loves us now. So we go in there, she lights us up with all these scratch tickets, all these Christmas scratch cards. Yes, we pay for most of them, And then we come home, and then we like line the tree up, and then we have like late night scratches. That is the best time, man.
That is the best thing ever. I love that. Oh, we need to go in on another lottery soon because.
Oh yes.
I think that Mega Millions is pretty high up there. I don't know when that plays though.
Is it getting high?
I think it was like 310 million is what somebody said earlier. I saw it somewhere. But yeah, we need to. We need to get on that. I mean, we do. Did you ever get your gifts or no?
I haven't got anything yet, man.
Okay.
Oh my god, I hope they come in before 50 time next week.
Oh,
I can't believe it, man. It's 1 week countdown to Christmas.
1 week from tomorrow. I am so excited.
That little video that you sent me of your daughter talking to Santa Claus on the telephone, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, hold on. Is she talking to Santa? How did Beam Me Up Scotty get Santa's number? And I don't even have Santa's number, so I'm a little bit jealous.
Hey,
can you just send me his number right after this?
I will, actually. You had texted me. You said, give me his number or whatever it was you said. And I was like, I'll just have to text it to him when I'm done. Because I don't even know it. Like, yeah, so Tiffany found it, and, you know, she's like... She's like, hey, do you want to talk to Santa? And Delilah's like, yeah, you know. And she didn't ask for much. She asked for candy and toys and socks. That's it.
Candy, toys, and socks. Like, I prefer toys, and I love bubble gum. You know what I mean? You know, candy's my favorite. Like, what can I do? You know? Oh, my goodness.
That's all
my mom ever gets me is socks.
Socks? Well, look, there's nothing like a brand new pair of socks, though, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, there's
not. I know.
But no, she has consistently asked for, candy and toys. The socks is a kind of a new development over the last week or so. But
yeah, that's new.
Yeah,
but why would any, like, I can't even believe a little kid asking for socks.
No.
Like, when I was a kid, it would be like, I'm like, you better give me the newest Batman out. Like, I need action figures, like, all day long. I need RoboCop. I need Batman. I need Gold Batman. I need a Batmobile. I need a Jokermobile. Like, that's actually on my list this year, just so you know. The 1989, but actually, it's 1990. When it came out, there's this toy Joker van. Oh, my God. From the original movie? Whoa, man. And Bob drives it, and Joker has this seat that pops up from the top of this van, and he sits on it, man, and it's amazing. But it's crazy. It's crazy expensive. You couldn't find these in stores, man, let me tell you.
Oh, I'm sure. All that cool stuff, like, if I had known how much, like, I would appreciate that stuff now, I would have really just not even touched that stuff when I was a kid. I would have got it, you know, and put it up somewhere, and then, you know, kept it, you know. Because, you know, now, as an adult, I appreciate stuff, you know. I appreciate all those toys. I used to have every single one of the Toy Story toys. Every single one of them.
Oh, you had the Toy Story toys? Oh, my God.
I did. I had them all. And, dude, where are they now? Dude, I don't know. So.
Man. Holy Toledo. You know what? Nadia screwed us over here in Gamers Paradise 2.0, where she wouldn't let us put up any toys. She's like, this is a grown-up house. This is a YouTuber house now. I'm like, what?
That is offensive.
I'm like, I got really mad, but then she bought us this sweet case that we can put our toys in that has a little light-up thing on it, so it's awesome.
Oh, that is cool.
A lot of our action figures went in there. Not my pristine action figures that are, like, back in the state, but, you know what I mean, back at the ranch.
Right.
You know, these are just extras that we bought, like, you know, RoboCop. cops with no guns, you know, an Ed 209. Oh my God. Like, you know, stuff like that. Ninja Turtles that are kind of like newer. They're not original Ninja Turtles, you know?
Yeah.
We would get our Ninja Turtles mixed up when we were kids. My grandma would come, she put white out on the bottom foot of our Ninja Turtles so we'd know who's with who.
Oh, grandma, my God.
Why are you putting white out on our Ninja Turtle? I was so mad. Who does that? Who wrecks someone's toy like that with a white out?
Right? Oh, my God. My
Ninja Turtle has white foot. Like, it's terrible.
It's tin foil from chocolate that I got during Christmas to make masks. And suits of armor for all my Legos.
I love
that's
that.
That's amazing. That is so creative, Dad. Holy
isn't it? That is so creative.
I love that.
People
oh
always say
God.
Things like that. People always say things like that, and I'm like, why could I not think of something like that? You know, like, am I that dumb? And you know what? I used to think I used to think I was smart, but the amount of time that it takes me to process a word that Tiffany spells in front of our child, like, it really suggests otherwise, you know? Like, I mean, I'm like, sound it out. Okay. So.
How big are these words? Why does she, you don't need that many words. You need like a thousand or two in your whole lifetime. Just get through it. You're fine.
I know, but. Be okay. Like right now, she picks up on literally everything you say. Like, I mean, everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's like you got to watch. She's like a little tape recorder now. So.
I learned from John Cena when he does his exercises, when he's. When he does his exercises so he can't do them anymore, he's gonna die, you know, he's doing his arm curls, and then he does 10 more, but he counts in Mandarin. I think it's Mandarin or Chinese, I'm not sure which one. I think it's Mandarin. He counts in Mandarin, and what he does, that way he doesn't feel the pain because he doesn't know what number he's saying. He just does it till he's done his 10, he's like, I don't feel any pain then, man. So that's what I've been incorporating. I've been trying to count Mandarin, and it's like crazy.
Maybe I should learn Mandarin.
Yeah, well, yeah, you get her in on a little bit of that. You be like, I like, okay, hold on, I'm gonna try to count to 10 again. Ling, Air, Shi, Su, Wu, Chi, Ba, Ju, Liu, or Ju, and then Shi, or San. I get all the Shis and Sans mixed up. I don't know.
Was that 1 through 10?
Yeah, that was 1 through 10. So it's Ling, Air, Shi, Su, Wu, Chi, Ba, Yu, and then San, or Shi. I don't know. I get the Shis and the Sans. I don't know, man. I don't know. But it doesn't hurt when I say them, though, when I'm doing the exercise.
No,
that's
but, you know, I got Susan Lucci out of that. I really did. So, I'm going to have to learn Mandarin. Going to have to. You got any game recs before we go?
Game recs?
Speaking of Pan, they're remaking, Ubisoft is remaking Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. That was one of my favorite games on GameCube. When that came out, I could wall run and wall jump. That was phenomenal.
It's weird that they're remaking it. They could just literally call it Assassin's Creed.
But let me tell you, I'm not even into it, bro. You know what I'm into? We opened up a little tiny gift like a day and a half ago from Nadia, and we've been ripping on this little a joystick Pac-Man head controller came with like 12 games. It has Pac-Man, it has Galaga, it has all these. You just literally plug into your TV, and you play on this big joystick with two A and B buttons. And I'm ripping on Pac-Man right now. Pac-Man Pop is actually the best game in the world, where Pac-Man's head gets huge.
That is
and
awesome.
Eats through walls. Yeah, man, like that's the one I'm going on right now.
Pac-Man's a classic. It really is. I mean, you can't beat it. You can't beat it.
Especially if you just blow off steam at like midnight and you're just like, oh man, when I'm like, oh, load that thing up for a couple rounds. We had high score last night. I think I got 62 or 63,000 points. Yeah,
and I'm at around 90 hours of Valhalla.
Oh, yeah. So, what is the game we just bought?
Cyberpunk.
We haven't even opened Cyberpunk yet, man. The
most anticipated
game of all time. It's like Grand Theft Auto, but like on steroids.
Maybe you should give a review for that one next week. I'm not sure.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, it's okay.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go, and then next week we'll do our Christmas special, and
Christmas time,
and then our season finale. Wow.
Sounds good, big man. Already. I can't wait. Oh, baby, what a great year, man, for this podcast.
It's been awesome. It's really been great having you guys on. It really has been such. It has added just, I feel, something just of value. I really do. So,
Thanks so much, man.
A good rest of your night, and I will text you Santa's number as soon as I hang up.
Yeah. All right, then, Scotty. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Dawson here. So my very first segment, and probably will be my favorite to do, is going to be about American Psycho. I'm going to give you guys a couple of random facts. So American Psycho is actually a novel written in 1991 by Bret Easton Ellis. And the story is told in first person by Patrick Bateman, a serial killer and Manhattan investment banker. So everybody knows Patrick Bateman as Christian Bale, right? Yeah, everybody, yeah, naturally. If you know the movie, you know Christian Bale is the face of American Psycho. But did you know that Leonardo DiCaprio was almost Patrick Bateman? An activist slash journalist actually steered DiCaprio away from the project to protect the young girls who fell in love with him after making Titanic. The odd kicker to this story? About 5 months after the release of American Psycho, said activist slash journalist married David Bell and became Christian Bell's stepmother. It's kind of weird. I think she was scheming is what she was doing. She knew what she was doing. So anyways, our next topic is going to be that Christian Bale's turn as Patrick Bateman is inarguably one of his best performances and one of his most beloved by fans. But what makes that kind of funny in retrospect is that he had multiple people telling him before signing on that the project would be career suicide. And I honestly think the more I read and researched is because it was a woman director. Mary Heron? I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she killed it. She also directed another movie called I Shot Andy Warhol, and you need to check that out if you haven't. It's a great film. So, did you know in the very beginning of the movie, whenever Patrick Bateman is peeling the face mask off, that only took one single take? And it's beautiful. It's a literal translation of the facade that the serial killer protagonist notes in voiceover, and it's impressive that the whole thing comes off in one piece. Making the moment even better is the fact that the production didn't need more than one take, as everything went perfectly during the first attempt. If you've ever done face masks, it never comes off in the first, swipe. Never. Not for me, at least, unless I'm doing something wrong. It may be the beard. And here's another odd fact about Christian Bale. If you've ever seen his work in American Psycho or anything else, you know his talent's beyond legitimate. But did you know that the guy evidently has capacity to consciously control his own sweat glands? During the filming of the famous business card exchange sequence, Bell's co-stars noted that the star was able to break out in perspiration at the same time, exact same time, take after take. It's kind of weird. I wish I could do that, Oh, I've got the meat sweats when I'm eating salad. That'd be hilarious. So another weird one is Patrick Bateman only having half blood on his face after Paul Allen's murder wasn't on purpose, but it was shot beautifully. I think they did really well with that. I mean, he was just driving his axe into Paul Allen's body and it just splattered perfect. Everybody, that's a very iconic scene. But my favorite tidbit that I read is that Christian Bale's performance at the end, whenever Patrick Bateman was confessing to his lawyer over the phone, took 15 to 16 takes. The director, Mary Heron, knew what she was doing. According to the director, she did something in the realm of 15 takes of the monologue, but the amount of takes she did had an end goal. She had a good reason for doing it, which was that Bell's energy was better and better the more drained he got. And actually, the final take in the movie that they placed is one of the last performances he did for the movie. Anyways, guys, my time is up here. I have to return some videotapes. Take care, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, the maybes.
finally thought about letting it go. The last 50 miles or so, legs are breaking and my feet are sore. Still a long, long way to go. Ka-ka-da-da. Ka-ka-da-da. There's always something better or there's something worse. Whether you are last or first, it's probably not a choice you'd take if you knew what you were up against. Contra-tata. Contra-tata. When your bomb detector couldn't find a golf ball, more than likely it's of no use at all. If you're lying or you're telling the truth, what exactly are you trying to prove? Contra-tata. Contra-tata. Always thought about letting it go. The last million miles or so. Heart is breaking and my head is sore. Still a long, long way to go. Ka-ta-ta-da. Ka-ta-ta-da.
Dawson here again, and I'd like to take a quick second to tell you a bit about the Anton Yelchin Foundation. Created in 2017 by Anton's parents, Victor and Irina, the foundation's mission is to empower and support young people engaged in creative arts who face career challenges due to debilitating disease or disability, and awards grants to eligible applicants, and brings their work to a wider audience. The grant application period is open year-round. If you would like more information, or would like to volunteer your services, your time, or skills to the foundation, please visit their website at AntonYelchinFoundation.org. Again, if you would like more information or would like to volunteer your services, your time, or skills to the foundation, please visit their website at AntonYelchinFoundation.org. Thank you all for listening.